2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Geeks Vegas Lines podcast. My name is Kevin, and today we're going to be talking about DFS strategy. In particular, we're going to be talking about late swap strategy. So before I get into that, a little couple words about the DFS Army. We are locked and loaded for the upcoming NFL season with more tools than ever before. I can't even go through everything here, but we've got premium content. We've got some free content coming up. We've got multiple writers attacking the NFL side from various angles, be them the value angle, be them cash versus GPP angle, general strategy, literally everything you need and the best projections and optimization tools anywhere, all in one place, all for half the price of most of the other sites. We are bringing DFS to the masses and turning Joes into pros with our system. No one else is doing this. We give you the tools to succeed just like the pros can. There is literally no gap in advantage anymore. So I'm really excited to bring this to you this year. But today we're going to talk about late swap. And here's the thing. What I'm noticing, and if there's any consistency, it seems as though we now have FanDuel and DraftKings both on the late swap bandwagon. Now, I actually really used to like the fact that FanDuel didn't have late swaps, particularly in NFL, because that does allow you a little bit of set it and forget it. Whereas now, what the late swap really does is open up an advantage to people who are smart, understand exactly how to use the late swap, and are willing to put in the work to take advantage of that, which is really quite asking a lot and not something that everybody automatically is going to know how to do. So we're really going to jump into this and kind of explore this here. There are two types of contests that we play in. One is the big tournament GPPs, and the other one is cash games. And I don't think late swaps are being utilized correctly by most people in either, but most certainly not in the cash games where it actually has a huge advantage. So I'm going to start with the GPP side of things, because this is always something that comes up. When do I utilize my late swaps? Now, we attack GPPs in two different ways. Sometimes we're using the domination station to make 20, 40, 150 lineups in a single contest, depending on what kind of player you are and what contest you enter. Most of us now, because of the new rules on DraftKings as an example, where all the under $5 games max out at 20 entry, most of us will be doing these 20 entry contests. I mean, I certainly recommend doing them. And when you're entering a massive sized contest like that, there's two ways to go. One, we're attacking the contest because we want to win it. We want a first place score. That's why we enter those kind of things. But we also want to cash. And this is the dilemma that we always face. So how do we use the late swap in a contest like this? It's actually more simple in GPPs. In essence, what's happening with the late swap is we really have to watch what happens in the early games. And depending again on how many game slate we're talking about, if this is let's say if we're talking in NFL and it's one that ends, it's a two slate contest. So the 1 p.m. and the 4 p.m. games, let's say, but it doesn't have the night game. So it's more of a challenge because you're under a time crunch that's wildly difficult to work with between these two slates, but we have to pay attention. So here's how it works. Most of the time, it'll be two slates and then, a night game or something like that. But no matter what it is, what we want to do is look at our scores after the first set of games. And we want to understand the difference between chalk and contrarian plays when we're doing this. So in essence, let's say I have a lineup that had a bunch of contrarian, like non-chalky, low ownership guys go crazy and go off in the first game or in the first half of a slate. Well, we've already gotten our diversification in essence from the first half, so we can look at our second half players in that contest, and if they're really also off chalk and you know, kind of out there picks, we might change some of those to more chalky plays that are we don't need differentiation because we already differentiated with the first half of the lineup. Sometimes it's vice versa. We go into the second half of a contest and we're behind to the point where, you know, a couple of our plays just bombed out. So now we want to at least try to make the cash line or do something. Well, at that point, if we look at our players that are still yet to play, and we want to maybe start looking for some wacky, again, low ownership situations that might have a chance of propelling us. Like, let's say we're loaded up with chalk. Well, chalk ain't getting us there. You know, once you start off shit, you know, the chalk plays just aren't going to do it. So you really want to pivot off of those in those lineups into some oddball plays that might go off. Now, this is sometimes philosophically, it's difficult to do this because you're like, I don't want to switch Julio Jones for Davante Adams or some play. Well, hey, you'd be leaving money on the table. Those kind of swaps are difficult to do. And I'm going to actually recall a contest where this was a big deal for me and how it worked out in a minute. But initially, I'm trying to explain philosophically how to approach this late swap, which is, again, we really have to understand the difference between chalk and, you know, low ownership GPP plays, and understand that our opponents are on the chalk because that's why it's chalk. So if we're starting off bad, we want to pivot away from the chalk in the second half of games. And if we're starting off really, really hot with some low ownership plays, not with our chalk plays, but with our low ownership sort of dice rolls, then that lineup, we don't want too much more low ownership. We don't want too many more low percentage plays. And then we want to go high percentage with the rest of it and see if we can't take down a contest. Again, in GPPs, the secondary thing to understand is when we're looking at these lineups, are we chasing the cash line or are we chasing the win? And I see far too often people believe that they're chasing the win when they have no chance to win. This comes up all the time. This comes up a lot in our Slack forums where people are asking me, hey, should I do this wacky swap to try to get the win? And you're looking at the lineup going, you have no chance of winning this contest. Don't switch off the chalk. Right now you can at least cash nicely. But if you switch off certain plays here, you're still not going to win. It's just going to lower what kind of cash you're going to take down. We don't want to cost ourselves when we have no chance either. So these are some really, really important differentiations to make. And generally, you can understand if you're not going to win by looking around you and seeing how many people have players yet to play. If you have one player yet to play and there are people many, many points ahead of you still have one yet to play and quite a few of them, and there's people behind you with two yet to play that aren't that many points behind, you ain't winning that. That's not a contest you're going to win first place in. So at that point, no, just roll with whatever chalk play you've got. Hold on to the cash. You know, hold on to, try to cash in the contest, turn a profit, and move on to the next one. We want to, I'm going to give an example of how late swapping really, really works great. Actually, if you're in our Slack, you might know Hunter Sinclair, who's one of my partners in crime, I would say, in the NFL channel. We talk a lot. He's a very good player. Last season, we attacked a two-game slate, and whatever it was a Sunday night, Monday night, and the Monday night game featured the Packers. This is all I remember of it so far, okay? It features the Packers. Now, this was a weird one where I think what ended up happening, if I remember correctly, was we weren't sure if this was a slate where, number one, Ty Montgomery was making his debut, I believe, or he was playing in the second game. Could have been his debut as starting running back, all right? The second thing that happened was, and this was interesting, we weren't sure if Randall Cobb was going to play. And, you know, it looked like he was going to play and blah, blah, blah. And then at 7:50, it was like 25 minutes before the start of the game, Randall Cobb declared out. Or either that or Davante Adams was... Well, we weren't sure if Davante Adams was going to play. In the last second, they said, no, he's going to play, right? He wasn't supposed to. Whatever it was a crazy scenario where with 20 minutes till game time, we find out that a player that we didn't think was playing, that nobody was on because he was supposed to be out, literally Roto-World called him out for this game. I think it was a concussion for Davante Adams, right? And so they were like, yeah, he's not playing. No one played him. And then like 20 minutes before the game, they're like, oh, he's suiting up, he's playing. So me and Hunter went nuts. We're like, holy shit. even though Davante Adams might not have been the ultimate play, like, you know, you want Jordan Nelson, and there was Randall Cobb and Ty Montgomery and all these other players. I think people were playing a lot of Jared Aberderis that week, or Jeff Janis, or whatever, assuming that Adams wasn't going to play. Well, as soon as we found out who was playing, we were like, oh shit, late swap. And both of us literally went nuts, just jumping through every lineup we could, and just as quickly as we could, just like swapping in Adams, all over the place. And the reason was, we figured in a two-game slate, when you can get what is in essence a starting player on the Packers at low ownership, who has big potential to go off, you just do it. Because in a two-game slate, again, you need that differentiation. If he does go off, you're probably winning a lot of contests. Which ended up happening. Hunter ended up winning his Bahamas ticket on that slate because of the Davante Adams swap-in. I ended up doing really great in the GPPs I was in. Did not take down a Bahamas ticket, obviously. But speaking of the Bahamas ticket, I'm going to mention a second scenario where the late swap comes into play and was very interesting in a qualifier contest. So last season, again, I was actually tied for a Bahama ticket. For the qualifier. I was in a six-way tie. So the next week, they're like, okay, since you tied, there's going to be a game or a tiebreaker between these eight players or 10 players, whoever it was. It was like the who's who of people you've heard of in the DFS world, CSU Ram and a bunch of other names that you would know. So we're in this contest, and I'm sitting in, I think it was 11 people in the tiebreaker. I'm sitting in sixth place going into the second game, or basically I'm behind. Now, the second game was Carolina versus Tampa, and I remember this one. Obviously, you remember the painful losses you remember the most. It was Carolina against Tampa, and I think Carolina didn't have Cam Newton going that week, so it was like Derek Anderson, and it was just a weird game. Now, Jonathan Stewart had been injured, so Carolina had been using a combination of like Cameron Artis Payne and some other player whose name I literally cannot remember right now. Unfortunately, I can't remember that name. But the week before, with the same scenario, they had the two running backs, and it was, let's say, Cameron Artis Payne that got all the touches. Most of the time. The other guy got a few touches, did nothing. So Cameron Artis Payne, let's say, was a popular punt in this particular contest. But we knew Carolina had this like dueling philosophy where Artis Payne was like the scat back in between the 20s, and the other guy was the goal line guy. And I can't remember who it was. Well, I'm sitting there looking at it. I'm like, I got to play catch up here. I got to catch up somehow. But, you know, I was messing around with some other things like Greg Olsen and who it, you know, it didn't really occur to me. I was like, oh, man, that secondary, that goal line vulture back, there's no way I'm playing him. He's not doing anything. That differentiation is too much. Well, it wasn't. In the end, no one used that second guy. He ended up scoring like two or three touchdowns in that game, and he would have been the difference for the Nuts. And after the game, I was kicking myself because I'm like, you know what? That was obvious, supreme differentiation staring me in the face in a qualifier type contest where it was winner take all. And I should have sacked up and used him, and I would have made, and that would have won me the ticket and the qualifier. But rather, I decided to try to differentiate with like Cameron Braid and Greg Olsen. Whatever it was, it didn't work. So, and it wouldn't have worked anyway because the differentiation wasn't enough because there were all these other players ahead of you who were going to be using similar guys. So it's just a reminder. If we're going for the Q win or some situation like that, we got to go and you're using the late swap and you're behind, you have to take a chance and you have to take a wild and crazy shot. Because in a qualifier type scenario, it's win or nothing. But you have to be able to judge whether you actually legitimately have a chance to win to be doing something like that. Because if you don't, you're better off not swapping, leaving your chalk in there and just taking the cash. I hope that really explains it because those are really the two scenarios that I foresee coming up a lot. The biggest thing with GPPs is understanding the difference between chalk and contrarian, and then understanding your lineup whenever you have that chance to swap and how is it going to work out. If your contrarian plays are working early, you might switch to some chalk plays late, vice versa. Now, on the flip side, this is where no one uses this. And actually, you know what? I'm excited to talk about the cash side, but before we do that, we're going to take a little break. I'll be right back with talking about how to utilize the late swap in cash games.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today using the coupon code PODCAST on DFSArmy.com to unlock 20% off your monthly subscription and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
Okay, we're back, and I'm now going to kind of go over a little used, maybe never used, or rarely used by regular players, often utilized by pros, strategy for cash games and the late swap. Now, most people think the late swap is really more of a thing for tournaments. You know, I'm trying to win a GPP, I'm going to use the late swap. The late swap is actually more of a thing in cash games, and I'm going to explain why. If you're in a cash game, and you're falling behind early, and you can see this, especially in a head-to-head. The head-to-head is better. It's a little bit trickier to measure this in 50-50s and double-ups, but in a head-to-head, it's very clear. Let's say you're going up against someone. They have a clear lead on you. Now, what you want to start to do is try to dissect their lineup and figure out, okay, who do they have going in the late portion? Do I have any of the same players? That's not going to help us, so we want to swap off of that. That kind of thing. Sometimes you can't tell. So I'm going to give that's very obvious. You're going to look at your cash opponent, and if it looks like you kind of have the same players, you can kind of tell by the positions in the cash and who was chalk. And like if you understand cash games, you kind of have an idea of who the chalk is each week. And if it kind of looks like, you know what, I think we have the same guys there, you definitely want to switch off of those guys and give yourself a chance to catch up. But you have to really stare at the lineup and understand what you have and what your opponent has. I'm going to speak in a broader term, though, about cash games in the context of chalk versus GPP. Let's say I'm in a cash game and, or not GPP, chalk versus contrarian. The same concept I was talking about earlier on the GPP games, but this is a different cash theory. If my cash team is shit in the bed, it's, you know, and it's chalky, in the first half it's doing bad, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm screwed here. And let's say I'm looking at my opponent, he's got a nice lead, he took a play here or there. What we want to do is pretty much do the same kind of thing, except smarter. You can look at your cash team and say, there's no way I'm catching up with the same team as it is. So maybe that's where you take a shot and you kind of flip off. You know, I might swap. Let's say I have two players left and I have a game flow dependent. Right now I have a workhorse running back that's going to do well no matter what, and I have some sort of sketchy wide receiver kind of punt play going on. Well, I might look and see, all right, here's a injury fill-in running back, or even more so a game flow dependent running back that really I normally wouldn't use in cash. Like imagine, you know, someone like, you know, like LeGarrette Blount is the normal example, although he's not so game flow reliant. I mean, the Patriots are always, he tends to do well. But my point is somebody of that, some single dimensional kind of player, like that is only going to do well if the team is doing well, like a fat Rob Thomas is the idea, right? And I might swap him in. He's cheap because he's game flow dependent. And I might swap him in my running back position and then move up to a much more studly wide receiver, whereas I had been punting the wide receiver position. The point is you got to switch it up, go off chalk if you see that you're not winning your cash game, if you're behind. This works for all sports, so it's going to be a pretty cool, I don't know if it's cool actually, but it is a tool that we're going to have to utilize. And again, there are some thought processes that said, you know, I'd rather be just chilling after my game start. A lot of people have that philosophy. I don't want to mess with my team. I already worked it. And I do want to say, do no harm first. So we do have to be very careful to do no harm with our lineups, which means don't just go swapping crazy contrarian plays in when you don't really need to. If you're doing okay or hanging with the chalk, just do that. But again, if you're obviously behind, and again, it's much easier to tell this in head-to-head games than even double-ups where there's a lot of people. Sometimes you can tell with a double-up too, and you just gotta go, you know what, screw it, I ain't winning like this, so I gotta do a change. It's okay, and it's smart, and what the sharp player would do is to get in there, make some changes to that lineup, go off chalk, take a chance, and try to win your contest. So what we want to do in the DFS Army and in general is we're teaching regular players to play like pros. We already have the tools. We already have the projections. We have the optimization tools. We have a weatherman in-house that's telling us tidbits that no one else gets. I mean, this is literally what the pros have going for them. They have that same stuff. They have people helping them with their optimization tools. They have all that stuff. But they have personal assistants doing this stuff, you know, the biggest guys I know. They have hired help. They pay a salary to do this. Well, we can't quite do that individually, but as a team, we can do it for everybody. So this is the last step. Play like a pro. You never give up. You don't ever have to really give up. With late swap, you don't really have to give up on your lineup. You can still work it throughout the contest. It really is something that no one does, or the average player is definitely not doing this. In GPPs, again, it's a virtual must if you're going to win them. It's almost to the point where I would say if you're not going to do that, you almost need to rethink the types of GPPs that you're going to enter, because the opposition is doing this. The people who are winning them are messing with them late. And again, I do actually hope that they have some contest without the late swap. I did like FanDuel not doing that for the reason of exactly this. I kind of always have this thought that it's going to be really hard to win one if your opposition is tailoring their lineups to different game theory possibilities and you're not. So either we have to get on board with that, or we need to rethink even entering certain types of contests. But that's your late swap. That's your late swap philosophy. We've got to utilize it one way in our tournaments and almost the reverse way in our cash games. Again, tournaments, we have scenarios where we're going to swap over to contrarian, and other situations we're going to swap over to chalk. Again, if our contrarian all hit, we want to make some chalky finishes to that and see if we can take down our contest that way. Again, in cash games, we want to really study our opponents, especially in head-to-head. Head-to-head's the easiest. You can really look and tell, oh shit, yeah, I know who he has. And I know how far behind I am. And oh, I have the same player. I ain't winning like this. So that's how you can make those changes philosophically and make it work. And then the final and probably most important rule of late swap is do no harm. Don't mess up your lineups with this. That's going to happen. Don't chase wins when you can't get them. Just take the cash. There's not that big of a difference between, you know, finishing top 2% or top 3% in the GPP. You're still going to, you know, it's not going to make a big difference. Or top 20% instead of top 25. It doesn't matter. Finish in the money, do no harm. But if you have a shot at the win, play smart, play like a pro, take down a GPP. That's it for this one, guys. I'll be back with a couple more of these, hopefully, before the start of the new season. Look forward to talking about this some more in chat. So if you guys have any questions, feel free to tweet me or message me in the Questions for Kevin room in our chat forum. That's it. Later, guys.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today using the coupon code podcast on DFSArmy.com to unlock 20% off your monthly subscription and get 2 free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.